This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 123 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, or should I say Hong Kong and Lithuania? Seems to me we've been on weird radio recently.
We have. And let's just mention that in just a second. We should mention, I think, that we missed an episode last week, which was really my fault. For all of you, I guess I was just a little too busy during the Thanksgiving holiday. So I know some of you have written in wondering what happened to the UAV Digest. And well, we skipped a week, so we're back.
And most likely we'll end up skipping another week at the end of this month of December, because unfortunately holidays are falling on our recording schedule. But we'll figure out something that we won't leave you in the lurch this time.
Right.
But we've got a dense show, since we've got 2 weeks to cover. So our topics tonight include a shout out to those dronies in Southern California, a brief mention of my Hong Kong radio thing, and then a lot of talk, I guess, about registration news. We've got a great video of the week about drones and airplanes, and some listener mail. So with that, I guess I'll throw it over to you, Max, to talk a little bit about Robo Universe.
Yeah, we just wanted to mention really quickly Robo Universe Conference and Expo. It's coming up really fast here, December 14th through 16th, 2015. It's in San Diego, California. It begins with a half day of interactive tutorials, followed by 2 days of conference sessions and exhibit hall access. There are a number of sessions. They include a drones track. There's keynotes by industry leaders, including Chris Anderson, CEO of 3D Robotics. They're going to have drone zone demos, an easy drone crash course, and Robo Game Changer startup competition. So if you act really fast, you can get 10% off on the conference price when you use the discount code DIGEST. So if you're interested in that, click the Robo Universe banner on the UAVDigest.com for more information. And now, David, we find that you've been on the radio in Hong Kong, of all places.
Yeah, we were invited as a guest, and it was a unique experience. There will be a link to the show notes. They podcasted the interview, but it was 7:30 p.m. my time, and I was recording in Hong Kong for Morning Drive with one of their shows called Backchat, which is, for our friends in the UK, it's a chat show for their Morning Drive, and they were talking about drones. It's not just me. Actually, it was an interesting thing about what they're doing in Hong Kong, given how crowded the airspace is and how crowded Hong Kong is. There's some interesting viewpoints. Now, you listen to this show all the time, so me espousing about drones and their bosses, you've heard before, but I recommend listening to the other aspects, because it's some other things you wouldn't expect to hear about drones in the UK, as well as other overseas components. So links to the show notes will be good on that. And I'll take this time to say that I was really good, and I didn't rant about Amazon's drone video, which came out last week. But I will say to all of my listeners, they haven't flown that drone yet. There's large banners on that video that says it's computer generated. I wish the media would learn to read. But enough of that then. I think we should get on to news. And more importantly, how about we talk about registration since we're a couple weeks behind on that.
The task force that the FAA set up to look at drone registration, specifically small UAS registration, delivered its recommendations to the FAA, and the FAA now takes those recommendations as well as the, I think, over 4,000 public comments that were received, and they're going to put those together and come back with their requirements for drone registration. And if they keep to their schedule, David, I guess it would be within the next few weeks.
The next 2 weeks if for them to implement this. In all fairness, I do kind of like what they came up with. It works on the KISS principle. Keep it simple.
Yeah, it sure
which
does.
Which is good. Registration for all drones between 250 grams or 0.55 pounds and 55 pounds operated outdoors.
So the big question is, how did they arrive at this this cutoff, this 250-gram cutoff? Below 250 grams, no registration required. 250, I guess, and up, you need registration. So again, the question, how did they arrive at that number? And it's kind of a fascinating approach they took, David. Did you study the math?
No, I did. Damn it, Jim, I'm a marketer, not a mathematician.
Well, it's all there in the task force report. But essentially what they did is this. They took as a given some data, some industry data, some data that's out there concerning what force does a hit in the head become serious? What's the energy of a strike to the head that leads to serious injury? And then they took formulas for calculating the energy of a falling object and made some assumptions about that object being a drone and how high it was and all that, and back calculated the mass of that object or that UAS that would cause that level of damage to a human being. And when you do all that math, you come up with around 250 grams. So that's how they did it. It's pretty lightweight. I mean, I would have just sort of subjectively, if I was picking a cutoff point and saying, okay, drones above this certain size need to be registered, I probably would have picked something a lot higher than that.
But there were drone manufacturers in this group, so they signed off on it. And the registration isn't by drone. Now, you are registering yourself as a owner. So you have one registration for all of your drones. So you have a bunch of drones that qualify. You only need to register once.
That simplifies a lot of things, I think. That avoids the issue of what's a drone and, you know, is it the frame or if you build your own, you know, where does it come from? And all of those kinds of questions. If the registration is by operator, not by drone, I think that solves a lot of issues. But they do recommend, or part of the recommendations is that as an alternative, you can register by the manufacturer serial number of the UAS if you want to do that. So you have that option.
Yeah, and that, either way, they're trying to keep it simple. Registration is required by time of flight, not point of sale, which there was a lot of retailers, I think, took a deep sigh of relief with that. So it's know before you fly. You know, you got to register your aircraft before you take it out and fly it, which, right, that again makes sense. Registering it at point of sale, I mean, all you'd end up having to register, and some of these are going to come back. Kids aren't going to want them and stuff for Christmas, so that's good. And the registration of what you're registering is pretty simple too, huh?
Yeah, they're not asking for a lot of information here. Just the minimum is name and street address. That's it. There's some optional information that you can provide, such as an email address or a phone number. But those are, as we said, optional. The recommendations of the task force are that only name and address are required for registration. Where does this data go? Well, I guess the FAA holds this data in its in a database.
Yeah, and they're keeping their the minimum information that's going to them are is at least for a security breach is not that we're not getting social security numbers or driver's license numbers or any real data that you couldn't get off of the internet. Now, once you register, you get a registration number. Now, like they said, you are registering this as a person, and so that all of your drones would have the same register number. So, and then you need to display that registry number on your drone.
All this is free. There is no citizenship requirement, and the minimum age for registration is 13. But possibly the most significant recommendation from the task force in all this is how that registration would be accomplished.
Right, and it's going to be web-based with a certificate mailed or emailed to registrant. So basically, you'll get an email address that's in the package or the FAA will provide, and you just go online, sign up for it, and they'll send you a certificate, and you print it out on your computer, or you get it sent to you and by the mail. Either way, congratulations, you're registered. So, okay, it's simple, but my biggest overall question was, okay, then what?
You mean after your registration process, going through the registration process?
Yes.
Yeah, after going through the registration process, what we have is almost an honor system that you've provided the accurate information as part of the registration process, and you've put the registration numbers on your UAVs. Then I guess the scenario is that should a drone be used improperly and it's retrieved or captured or, you know, obtained somehow, that registration number would indicate the owner or the registrant of that UAV, and then the authorities could go locate that person. Now, that may or may not have been the person flying the thing at the time, but I guess the idea is that at least it gives the authorities a start in terms of finding people who are misusing their UAVs.
So with all of this, there was some, I don't want to say pushback, but people who participated in it voiced their opinions. I guess we should start off with the first one would be the AMA, or the Academy of Model Aeronautics. And they were quoted as saying, the AMA agrees that registration of UAS makes sense at some level for flyers operating outside the guidance of a community-based organization or flying for commercial purposes. But it does not support registration for its membership flying non-commercially because they do not operate under a community-based organization.
Right, because they do operate under a community-based organization.
Oh, sorry. They're sort of like, yeah, we think it's a good idea, but we don't think it's a good idea for our members.
Because they point out that in the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012, that it states very clearly that the FAA is prohibited, they say, from promulgating any new rules for recreational users operating within the safety guidelines of a, guess what, community-based organization. This has been Congress' intent, as everybody just about has interpreted it. And so while the AMA was part of this process of coming up with these recommendations, they don't fully support all of this in that regard. They really want to see a continued separation of hobby flyers who are flying under the guidance of a community-based organization such as the AMA. So that's kind of open. But there are other reactions too, right? We have a reaction from DJI.
Yeah, and DJI was one of the leads, and they shared concerns of the many of the 4,700 people who filed comments with this process and initiated in response to the sensational headlines rather than the data-based risk assessments and contradicts the provisions of several federal statutes. Nonetheless, we undertook in good faith the assignment, which was not to argue the law, but to use our expertise and knowledge as the world's largest drone manufacturer to recommend the administrator a national drone registration system intended to be minimally burdensome to consumers, professionals, and effective at the stated goals. So basically, they're saying we don't really, really like this idea, but we have to go along with it because it's the FAA.
One of the things that we talked about when this task force was first announced was the seemingly impossible task to address all of the issues surrounding UAV registration in this incredibly short time period that the task force was given. And whether intentional or not, you know, David, maybe this really, really short period of time forced the participants to compromise, to keep it moving forward. Otherwise, it could have easily been a 6 or 12 month kind of a debate. So, you know, maybe the short period really supported coming up with something, you know, in the roughly 2 weeks.
It's not perfect, but it's a compromise.
Yeah. Now, of course, we should also mention that these all are the recommendations of the task force. This is not necessarily what the FAA is going to issue as the requirements, right? So as we've said, they'll theoretically consider the task force recommendations, consider the comments from the public, and put those all together in something that they'll issue. So stay tuned. It should be coming fairly fast.
Yeah, so one of the things that came out of this was a friend of our show from Precision Hawk, Leah Reich, on LinkedIn put five things to know about the mandatory drone registration. So I'll put a link to that show notes. It was a very simple summary of what the five important points are. We've gone into a lot more detail about it, but Leah was part of the Women on Drones panel at the Drone World Expo in San Jose, and I'm working to try to get her on the show to talk about women in drones. That sounded like a great panel. So, again, link to the show notes, and thanks to Leah for that. So, I guess, overall, what do you think, Max? Do you think in 2 weeks we're going to, I guess we'll hedge our bets and say that the FAA will have something, or do you... Or do you think January's going to come along and we're still going to have no drone registration?
I'm going to go counter to my intuition and suggest that the FAA is going to issue something here in the next couple of weeks in advance of, well, Christmas itself or the actual holiday itself, but in advance of this anticipated huge
influx of...
Right, influx of drones into the hands of hobbyists, and try to get them registered. Of course, there needs to be a pretty serious communications effort after this in order to let people know that they're supposed to register their new toys. But I'm curious to see how that happens.
So, folks, he's betting on a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this. All right, we'll know soon enough.
So, okay, let's move on to some other news. Emery Riddle, who was on the show about 4, 6, 7 weeks ago, Emery Riddle Worldwide offer a free online UAS course for new users. This is good news in that basically we can there'll be a course for the basics for someone who gets one in the end of the month for whatever holiday.
Yeah, the timing is pretty good. They intend to run this from January 11th to 24th, 2016. Registration opens December 8th. Now, they're calling this a massive open online course, MOOC. And the idea is that this is really is open to everyone worldwide. They say that it will have two pre-recorded presentations, 30 to 40 minutes each. There'll be some interactive discussion boards, supporting links and videos. And as you mentioned, David, it's going to include things like UAS basics and a few other things.
the UAS operating environment, the National Airspace System, understanding the basic do's and don'ts of UAS recreational drone operations, and planning to fly safe. This sounds great. I don't know about you, but I'm probably going to register for it.
Yeah, if for no other purpose than to...
for us to be able to talk about it later.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, absolutely. This is a great thing. I hope this gets a lot of publicity and promotion. I think we'd encourage all of you listening to do what you can in social media to pass this around, make sure that people are aware of this.
And again, it's no cost, and there's a lot of what's kind of I'm hoping that the registration doesn't close until like January, because basically we want people like the week of after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, when they're thinking about flying their new toy, maybe they need to go over this too. So we're going to put a link in the show notes, and I guess both Max and I would like to ask you, go send it out to your friends and let everybody else know that it's out there, and take it yourself. You know, we all seem to claim to be experts, but I mean, do we know everything? No, and it doesn't hurt to have a refresher course. There's a reason why when you have professional licenses, like you're a pilot, or as I have my insurance licenses, I have to go back to school every 6 months to relearn some things and to keep fresh and keep current. So go to Embry Riddle. And again, I think we'll keep mentioning this in the next couple of weeks so we can get people involved. So talking about sponsorship, let's talk about UAV Propulsion Tech and their blog post number 13, UAVs spotted at Dubai Air Show in 2015. They were lucky they got to go to Dubai, and boy, were Bob Schmidt, who was president and a friend of our show, was surprised at the amount of UAVs at Dubai.
He went over there looking for potential UAV customers for the products and services that UAV Propulsion Tech offers, things like propulsion systems, servos, autopilots, also rescue and recovery parachute products. And his blog post, it's kind of a trip report sort of a thing, and he describes the UAVs that he saw at the air show. He's got a lot of photos of them in there, so that's fairly interesting. But he said he didn't see as many UAV exhibitors there as he had hoped.
Well, and it's interesting because it sort of fits this theme that we talked about on our other show about the Abu Dhabi air show, the Dubai show, where overall everybody seemed to think that the show was light, I guess would be an across-the-board statement, even for the airliner sales and military sales. So Bob's UAV feelings sort of supported the overall tone of the air show. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I guess that seems pretty consistent. He does note that there's another show coming up in that region in March next year, 2016, that is kind of much more focused on UAVs, and that might represent some greater opportunities. That's the UMEX show, the Unmanned Systems Exhibition and Conference, and that's in Abu Dhabi next March.
We've got some listener, not necessarily listener mail, but we got a story sent to us by Rob. Australia Post could soon be delivering packages with drones. This was businessinsider.com.au. Australia Postal Mail getting ahead of U.S. Post Mail and Amazon and FedEx, huh?
They're looking at trialing package delivery, and they say they may be able to start this as early as next year. They're looking at $10,000 drones, packages of up to 2 kilograms, traveling a distance of up to 25 kilometers, although the article notes that the Post is looking at ways they can transport packages up to 10 kilograms, which is a lot. We asked Rob if he could kind of dig out some more details about this for us, and he did reach out to the Australia Post. Didn't get too much additional information. These will be autonomous, he says. They're looking at incorporating the use of smartphones. And interestingly enough, we'll have some sort of bird and obstacle avoidance capability built into it, which is that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like the bird avoidance, but that could be bad if there's a big flock of birds or a murder of crows. I like that term.
You know, not many people know that. Yeah, that a lot of crows is called a murder. Anyway.
But sorry. Yeah, I know. I was dropping terms.
Show off.
It was funny, though, because in his description, it matches the Amazon video that, you know, they talk about being notified on your – Jeremy talks about being notified on your smartphone that your package is arriving and it being able to figure out where it's going to land. But Rob did also say that he didn't see any CASA, which is the Civil Aviation Authority for Australia, giving any approval for the Australian Post to actually do this. So interesting that things are going on, but not necessarily being approved of by the powers that be. So yeah,
they had to get involved at some point. For sure, they have to.
I don't know. This package delivery by drone thing, 2016 will be interesting.
Mm.
So with that, I guess we've got a video of the week, which came to us from our friend Jamie, actually, this morning. This is really good. Can crop dusting pilots see a drone to avoid hitting it? And they checked it. Colorado Agricultural Aviation Association, which is a group of ag pilots, made a video, and they had flew quadcopters up against the agricultural airplanes to see if the ag pilots could spot the drones.
It was kind of an interesting test. They had a number of fields identified. They didn't tell the pilots which ones had drones and which ones didn't. And they had the pilots fly crop dusters. In the video, there's a Robinson helicopter I see doing the same. And they sent them over the field and said, "You see any drones here?" And time after time, the result is the same.
The result is no joy,
yeah.
Which is the pilot saying, nope.
They couldn't see them.
It's a very telling video, and anybody who wonders why you're not supposed to be flying drones within 5 miles of an airport, this is a good video to watch and show your friends. It's kind of an eye-opening. But they did it for positive reasons. You know, they wanted to... agriculture that wants to use UAVs, and they're going to have to find a way to integrate them into the agricultural airspace, which is a lot lower than, you know, when you're dusting crops, you're not much higher than 50 feet off the deck. So you're definitely going to need some sort of networking with the drones as well as the pilots. So good video for everybody to watch.
All right, David. Well, I think that's about all we have lined up for this episode of the UAV Digest. I want to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 123. Find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes have links to all the items that we mentioned. If you want to go straight to the show notes for that episode, just go to theuavdigest.com/123.
And of course, I'd like to say... to our Twitter fans, thank you very much. We are now up over 5,000 Twitter followers, so I appreciate all that. Facebook, again, we have an active Facebook community. It's facebook.com/theuavdigest. And if you'd like to submit us some mail or feedback or story, remember that we love the international stories. So if you're overseas, send us your stories because we don't necessarily have access to them, but we'd love to talk about them. So you can send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com or max@theuavdigest.com, because it seems to me I get all the mail, but that's because I'm alphabetically at the top of the list.
Is that what it is? I've been trying to figure out why you get so much more. No, I shouldn't say that because now I'll get a lot of mail.
Actually,
that's okay.
And of course, if you want to support the show, you can do it by listening, write a review at iTunes. It helps people find us. We want to be able to broaden our reach out to as many people as possible to talk about the show. Or likewise, leave feedback on Stitcher.com. And if you'd like to support the show, it's getting towards the holidays and you want to get somebody a present, there's always our get some swag at cafepress.com/theuavdigest. or you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/theUAVDigest. And of course, we always appreciate our sponsors and our patrons who help us fund the show and give us the ability to reach out to do things like talk to Hong Kong, which if you told me 2 years ago I would be talking about drones on a public radio talk show in Hong Kong, I would have told you you were absolutely nuts. But that's okay. Max topped me. He decided to have a talk show in Lithuanian. We're trying to go for the smallest countries in the world for talk radio. So with that, I guess I'll say, again, our apologies for last week, but we made up this week. And this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.